All right, welcome to Brighttown Broadcast News, Monday, September 18th, 2023. Mike Adams here. We've got a lot to cover. A lot has happened over the weekend. First of all, on Saturday, Attorney General of Texas Ken Paxton was acquitted on all charges. I believe it was 16 charges. I was watching that live and just thinking, wow, what a bunch of rigged accusations. The people who were accusing him of wrongdoing were pretty much Bush operatives and Democrats that just kind of joined forces to try to take out Ken Paxton, who is a pro-America, pro-Trump attorney general, pro-free speech, you know, pro-First Amendment, pro-Second Amendment. They just can't stand that, so they wanted to take him out. And it was the Bush operatives and the Democrats that tried, but all the accusations against him were complete fiction. They literally just made things up, and they then reported it to the FBI, and then they made sure that the FBI reports got leaked to the media so that the media started reporting the FBI leaks as facts. Now, does this sound familiar? Sound familiar? This is what they did to Trump, and this is what Nancy Pelosi referred to as the, I think it was Pelosi, the wrap-up smear. Remember that? The wrap-up smear, where they make something up against you, and then they get it into the media by sending it to the FBI and having it leak. And this is just one of the many weapons to try to shut down truth tellers or champions for America. You know, they censor you, or they deplatform you, they smear you, and then sometimes they criminally indict you like they've done with Trump. And sometimes it's a combination of all those things. So the more you speak out against the globalists and in favor of the truth, the more you're going to be targeted by these weapons, and maybe lawfare as well, which they've used to target Alex Jones. And by the way, then another major news item that happened over the weekend was that Russell Brand was accused of raping four women or sexually abusing four women, I guess 15 years ago or roughly thereabouts, in a coordinated attack by multiple UK-based media outlets. They went after Russell Brand with unnamed accusers, unnamed, who claimed that he did horrible things to them, again, 15 years ago. So why nothing for 15 years? And then all of a sudden, boom, it all hits together with the media and the unnamed women. Why all of a sudden? Well, it's obvious, because Russell Brand is speaking out against the globalists. He's speaking out against Big Pharma. He's becoming more and more of a truth teller as he's being red-pilled every single day. And so they're trying to shut him down. And this is how they do it. They try to discredit you. And the good news is that I think most people who are red-pilled don't buy this anymore. They don't buy it. It's just too suspicious that just the people who are speaking out against the, you know, the crooked, corrupt establishment are the ones who get accused of all these horrible things. And the accusers aren't named, and there appears to be zero evidence of any of this. It's just another smear campaign. That's what it looks like. And people have come to expect this. And then finally, another major news item that happened over the weekend. We carried this live. Robert F. Kennedy Jr., he was invited as a guest of a town hall event with Stand for Health Freedom, a group out of California, I believe. And RFK, he threw down the gauntlet on the rigged DNC, and he promised to, quote, look at other options if the Democrat Party bosses won't allow a fair and free election. And I've got a lot of quotes from him. I published a story on this yesterday on naturalnews.com. And we carried the live stream on Brighteon.tv, by the way. And it was a great event. I mean, this guy, RFK, man, he's got so many amazing, powerful quotes about fighting back against censorship and Big Pharma and the WHO and the military-industrial complex and the rigged DNC. So we're going to do a full analysis on that. And then finally, coming up here later today, we're going to have an interview that I recorded last week with an accountant who's also a prepper and kind of a YouTube personality named Steve Poplar. And this is the first time that I was able to interview Steve Poplar. And so we're going to run that and I think you'll find it really fascinating. I want to remind you that The Greater Good, which is the documentary by Leslie Manoukian and Kendall Nelson, that documentary is playing right now today and all this week on Brighteon University, which is brightu.com. So if you haven't yet seen that documentary, we're playing it for free. It's on a repeat loop. So all you have to do is go to brightu.com. That's just the letter U, B-R-I-G-H-T-U.com. And you can enter your email address there to register and watch the film for free. And it's a very, very powerful film that was actually created before COVID. And now everything that film was talking about has just gotten worse and worse and worse. So you're going to, I think, really enjoy that documentary. Now, by the way, last week I interviewed Professor Michel Chosudovsky from the Center for Research on Globalization. If you missed that interview, I really encourage you to go back and find that on my channel there on brighteon.com and definitely give that a listen. It's Professor Michel Chosudovsky, just an extraordinary thinker, and it was a really hard-hitting, powerful, powerful interview. That's one that you absolutely do not want to miss. And then I'm also happy to say that we interviewed on Friday for the new show Decentralize TV, we interviewed David Morgan, the Silver Guru. Now, that's not going to play for a while, I believe, but it was a really powerful interview. And then finally, one more. I know there's a lot going on, right? Today at 2 p.m. Central or 3 p.m. Eastern, we are televising live a telethon for Jonathan Emord, who's running for the United States Senate. Jonathan Emord is an extraordinary man, extraordinary candidate, and you can catch that on brighteon.tv. Again, that's the main channel beginning at 2 p.m. Central, hosted by Robert Scott Bell, and I will also be a guest on that telethon event. I've also got some other headlines. I'm not even sure I'm going to get to them. Of course, the UAW, the big workers union, the strike has begun. 12,700 workers at three automobile manufacturing plants so far, Ford, General Motors, and Stellantis. It looks like the strike could affect 146,000 workers sometime later this week. So maybe we'll have time to get into that. Of course, that's being caused by the big push for electric vehicles and the government ordering car companies what to manufacture. In other words, products, EVs, that people don't want to buy. So, of course, things are bad. Oh, and then one other headline I got to get to. The Department of Defense now wants to wage a three-front war, which is to have a war with Russia, a war with China, and a war with Mexico at the same time. How insane is that? I mean, we are living under a tyrannical, dark empire run by absolute lunatics. Instead of trading with Russia, China, and Mexico and having, you know, economies and respecting other nations, the game plan of the U.S. is to just destroy all the other nations. I mean, a war on Mexico, of course, it's described as a war on the drug cartels, but it would mean a military invasion of Mexico. I'm not even sure I'm going to have time to get to that topic, but it's completely freaking insane. And by the way, the U.S. couldn't wage successfully a war on one of those three countries. I don't even think the U.S. military could beat the Mexican drug cartels, frankly. I really don't. Because the U.S. military, sad to say, you know, under the woke Pentagon, libtard lunatics, and all the fraud and waste and kickbacks and everything, the money laundering, I don't think the U.S. military, I mean, I know they can't beat Russia. I know they can't beat China. I don't think they could beat the drug cartels. The world is laughing at the U.S. military with your drag queen dancing, you know, recruitment, transgenders. I mean, really? The world is laughing at the U.S. military. They're not afraid of the military. All right, so let's go to Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who, by the way, is anti-war, which is what most Democrats used to believe. And, you know, since the Democrat Party became a bunch of lunatic fascists, then they no longer are anti-war. But you and I are anti-war. I mean, we don't want this war to happen. So RFK Jr. wants to stop the war, but the bombshell that he dropped during this town hall meeting on Sunday is essentially he's throwing down the gauntlet on the rigged DNC. And since I was watching, I took notes. Here's what he says, quote, "I've watched the Democratic Party kind of go off the rails." Yeah, you think so? They've gone way off the rails. They can't even see the rails. He says, "My hope was to summon Democrats back to being a Kennedy Democrat, but we'll see. It's very clear now that the DNC, they're supposed to be neutral. They're not supposed to take sides. But 5 days after Biden made his announcement that he was going to run, the DNC endorsed him." And then he says, quote, "The DNC campaign is the Biden campaign and vice versa. And they've declared war on me." That's what Kennedy is saying. They've declared war on me. And then he says that if the DNC doesn't play fair, he's going to look at other options. This is the bombshell news headline, frankly, of the entire podcast here. Here it is. Quote, "They've changed the rules," he says. "They've disenfranchised states that voted against Biden last time, so their votes will not be counted in the primaries. Even if I win all the states, I could lose at the convention. Even if I win those states overwhelmingly because the votes of the superdelegates," and then it was unclear, he says, "and so we are appealing to the DNC to make this a free and fair election. And if they don't do that, I'm going to look at other options." Now, what other options are there? Well, I mean, there are, frankly, I don't know, two or three options. Let's talk about them here for a second. Option number one, he could announce a run as an independent. That's probably the most likely option. And I think he would do very well as an independent. However, it's very difficult to win a national election as an independent because, of course, both parties are fighting you and the media is fighting you and the establishment is fighting you the whole way. But then again, the American people are totally fed up with the media and the establishment and the government and the lies and propaganda and the open borders and the plandemics and the war on Ukraine and just endless, you know, bullcrap from the establishment. So frankly, right now, if an independent could ever win a U.S. election, it's right now. It's now. So, hey, my guess is that within a month or maybe a little bit longer, my guess is that RFK announces he's running as an independent. The other option, or at least one of the other options, is that he could join another party that is already on the ballot in some states, such as the Green Party. I'm not sure that he lines up exactly with the Green Party. I'm not even sure that the Green Party believes in green anymore since, you know, the climate change lunatics now want to cut down all the trees and kill the trees and kill the green, you know, turn everything brown and dead. I'm not sure if the Green Party believes the same things that the climate lunatics believe or if the Green Party is based on a lot more common sense. But I haven't heard anything about RFK joining the Green Party. It's a possibility that is out there. So I'll mention it. And that's about it. That's all I know about that. The third option, which I consider to be highly unlikely, and I don't have any special inside information on any of this, by the way, even though I interviewed, you know, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., I don't have contact with him, and I'm just watching what you're watching, but he could join the Trump campaign. Look, I know he already said he's not going to do that. And Kennedy and Trump are very far apart on a lot of issues. For example, you know, Trump is very much pro military. Kennedy is not so much. Kennedy wants to stop the wars. Well, I guess Trump wants to stop this silly war too. But Kennedy doesn't want to fund the military-industrial complex, whereas Trump seems to be more than happy to do so. Secondly, RFK Jr. is far more outspoken against Big Pharma than is Trump. Trump can barely bring himself to say that Pfizer should release all the data, whereas RFK is talking about sending people to prison who were part of the bioweapons development program and completely reforming the NIH. you know, gutting the FDA, the USDA, the CDC, and also the vaccine injury compensation program. You know, Trump never talks about that stuff like that. Trump's just not willing to go there when it comes to reforming government to the depth that RFK Jr. talks about routinely. Okay, so that's another issue. The third issue, I think, where they have a big difference is in energy and climate. So RFK Jr. is, of course, a very vocal opponent of coal. And he does not like fossil fuels, especially coal. Maybe he's okay with natural gas, but definitely not coal. Whereas Trump is very much pro-coal and coal industry, coal miners, and what have you. Now, RFK Jr. used to be more of a climate, like a traditional climate guy who thought carbon dioxide was bad. And I think he's coming around a lot more on that. He talks about how the climate narrative is used to lock people down and control people instead of being used to, you know, enable people and set people free and so on. And he's absolutely correct about all of that. Whereas Trump is going to side with those who are, you know, fossil fuels and energy and so on, and who despise the climate cultists and that whole, you know, fake movement about the climate. So at least on those three areas that I'm aware of, RFK and Trump are not very compatible. However, I should mention that I do believe that a Trump-Kennedy ticket would be an unbeatable ticket. There's no question in my mind that Trump-Kennedy on the same ticket would defeat Biden and anything that the Democrats would come up with. And it would be amazing. And I've even suggested before, what if Trump and Kennedy did a deal, like a secret deal, where Trump agreed to serve as president for just 1 year, and then he would resign and make RFK the president. So, you know, Trump could serve maybe 1 or 2 years, I don't know, and then RFK could serve out the remainder of that administration, and that way they would both get to, you know, put their policies in place while they're in the Oval Office. I mean, it's just a wild suggestion. I'm just saying maybe there are ways they could work out their differences. I don't know, but it seems to me that's one possible thing that they might consider. In any case, like I said, I don't have any inside information on this. I don't know what they're thinking. It's just that we desperately need to win this election. And when I say we, I mean we the people. And frankly, if RFK is in the White House, I think that's a win for we the people. And also, if Trump defeats the establishment and wins this election, that's a defeat of the establishment and a win for the people, right? So either one of these men, in my view, is a win for the people. But I think that RFK is in a very special position right now where he can legitimately threaten the DNC with running as an independent. And the DNC knows that if RFK runs as an independent, the Democrats probably lose. And the reason I'm saying this now, and my analysis of this has evolved a little bit over time, but the reason I'm saying it now is because I think that RFK will bring so many Democrats with him that that number will be larger than the number of Republicans that he takes from the Trump camp. So I think that most Republicans would continue to vote for Trump, whereas a lot of Democrats would vote for Kennedy as an independent. And as a result, Biden would not have a chance. I mean, not that he did anyway. They had to rig it in 2020. You know, Biden didn't even win the first time, right? It was completely stolen. Ballot stuffing, criminal operation. He even bragged about it, Biden did. Remember that time on air during the campaign? He just openly bragged. He said, you know, I'm told we have the largest vote fraud operation in the history of the United States. Well, yeah, that's exactly what they have. They cheat, cheat, cheat. That's the only way they, quote, win. Well, the question is, can they cheat enough if like 3/4 of the country turns against the establishment? Which I think is a pretty accurate assessment of where we are. I think 3 out of 4 Americans are fed up with it. And 3 out of 4 Americans would probably vote against Biden and for either Kennedy as an independent or Trump. And it's going to be hard for the Democrats to cheat their way out of that. Now, the other thing to keep in mind is that RFK Jr., in this event yesterday, he spoke out in favor of defending the Constitution and health freedom. He says, I am a constitutionalist. I believe the Constitution should be defended. And he says that the government's efforts to silence critics has equated to, quote, a systematic dismantling of the Bill of Rights of the Constitution. He speaks out against totalitarianism and a surveillance state. He said, if a totalitarian regime ever gains control over our country, the level of control they can exert will be irresistible. He says they can shut off your bank account. They can starve you to death. They can kick you out of your house. It's not theoretical. They did this to the Canadian truckers so that they couldn't buy food for their children. If the government has the capacity to starve you to death, they have the capacity to turn you into a slave, he said. I couldn't agree more. Could not agree more. And by the way, if you want to join the email list for Robert F. Kennedy Jr., just go to Kennedy24.com. That's the website. Kennedy24.com. And join the email list there and stay up to date. And you can also, of course, keep watching naturalnews.com and brighttown.com and other alternative media because, you know, RFK Jr. is going to be all over the alt media during this campaign. And I welcome him back on as well whenever he is back in Texas. He can come in studio at the Brighttown Studios and join us in person, and we'll be happy to give him a platform to further articulate his beliefs on things. But I got to say, he hasn't been holding back. He has already said so much. He lays it out there. He says, quote, the day I get into office, I will pardon Edward Snowden and Julian Assange. Amen, brother. Pardon Snowden and Assange. And he talks about how the food is being poisoned. He says there's mass poisoning of the American people taking place. The food now has more poisons than nutrients. Yeah. He gets it. And again, this is an area where Trump just doesn't have any knowledge. I'm not insulting Trump. I'm not trying to. It's just that, you know, RFK Jr., he knows all about nutrition and food and pollution. He knows about organic farming and GMOs and regenerative farming. I've never heard Trump even utter the phrase regenerative farming or organic anything, frankly. I've never heard Trump talk about the problems with GMOs, you know? So there's a huge gap here on issues that matter to myself and also to our audience, which is, you know, clean food, stopping the pollution, stopping the heavy metals, stopping the GMOs, stopping the glyphosate, the pesticide poisoning. And this means you have to change the whole model of farming. It can't just be, you know, commodity production or what does he say? RFK says, China is in control of our landscapes and our food production. They've turned farmers into serfs. We need to incentivize farmers to produce good, high-quality food for the American people rather than commodity filler that's loaded with chemicals. And then RFK says he's going to defund the WHO. He says they've just become an instrument for big pharma and big ag. And he says the WHO should not be dictating global health policies, shouldn't be involved in giant vaccination programs. He says global medicine is the path to totalitarianism, so we have to get rid of it. So just on and on and on. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. just absolutely nails it on every issue that I can think of, or nearly every issue. Again, I'm not sure exactly what he thinks about the climate at this point, but I can assure you, he is a thoughtful man, and what he will bring to the table as president will be not just invaluable, but frankly, revolutionary. It would change history, the outcome of this country. The path would just be instantly changed. Oh, and by the way, did you see that someone tried to assassinate RFK over the weekend? I think that was Saturday. There was a man who pretended to be a U.S. Marshal. And he was wearing a badge and a gun, like a gun sling under his arm with a loaded weapon in it. And he said, I guess he approached the other security team members and said he was part of the security team and was trying to get access to RFK. And his security team did not recognize him. And so they had him pause, you know, they kept him away. And then eventually he got arrested by local police. And it turned out, well, his name has been released now. In fact, let me play the video for you. Okay, here he is. Look at this guy. What? He's got a badge on his hips. He's got a badge around his neck. He's got, like, olive drab tactical pants of some kind. Sunglasses. There's a holster under his right arm there. Bearded, tattooed, black hair. His name has already been released. Some people think, oh, and look at his like Desert Storm combat boots, by the way. That doesn't seem appropriate for such an event. What are you doing with desert combat boots in the middle of a city? It's just something doesn't fit. And he's got a fake ID badge there, it looks like, huh? Interesting. So this guy's name has already been given out. I'm not going to mention it. And a lot of people think that this guy might be a Fed who was caught on purpose, and that this was part of a federal operation to send a message to RFK Jr. that is, you know, back off or we'll have somebody kill you. Because, of course, the Kennedy family, you know, JFK was assassinated by the deep state. And so was RFK, you know, his father. I mean, RFK Jr.'s father, obviously, Senator Kennedy, was also assassinated effectively by the deep state. So the deep state is sending a message, a lot of people believe, to tell RFK to back off. Well, he's not backing off, and he's pushing forward, and he needs our support, frankly. I mean, this man is literally putting his life on the line to try to help save America. So go to Kennedy24.com and sign up there for the email list and make a donation if that resonates with you. Make a donation, because he's not going to get any money from the establishment. He's going to need our support in order to be competitive in this election. All right, so let's move on to some other news items here. See if I can make it through these. Gosh, there's a lot to cover. So let's go to Ken Paxton, the Texas AG. He says, after he was acquitted of all the charges over the weekend, he says, quote, I can promise the Biden administration the following. Buckle up. Your lawless policies will not go unchallenged. And the Biden regime is looking at leveling some sort of criminal indictments against Ken Paxton. Now, at least that's the rumor. But Paxton knows that this is a war because he's been subjected to it. And this is why I love to support people like Paxton or RFK or Trump, people who have been viciously attacked, people who have been smeared, people who have been threatened, because they get it. So I'm going to strongly encourage Paxton to go all in. And I am dedicated to supporting Paxton and his future political career in terms of publicity. I think he should be Attorney General of the United States of America. So if Trump is reelected, then Ken Paxton should be the AG, in my opinion. If RFK wins the election, I don't know who he would, you know, tap as Attorney General, but probably wouldn't be Paxton. But Paxton, I think, would be an excellent choice, no matter who is president. All right, now let's go back to Russell Brand for a minute, because I want to put something on the record here before we move on about these accusations against Russell Brand. Here's the default position that you and I should take. We should never believe any such accusations against a conservative or someone speaking out against the globalists or someone who's speaking out against vaccines and so on. Someone who's challenging the establishment. We should never believe accusations against them by default. Never. You should only begin to believe them if there is hard evidence that the allegations are true. And by the way, hard evidence does not include just four people saying something, four people accusing him of something. You know, I'm sorry to say that we can no longer just automatically believe anybody making accusations against someone who's a truth teller, because those people can be paid. So in other words, the globalists can run around and they can find four women, let's say, or in a reverse situation, you know, four men or two women and two men, if they're going to go after a bisexual person, whatever. They can find people and they can pay them to fabricate lies. $100,000, that a lot of people would do it for less. Some people will fabricate lies for $5,000. Depends on how desperate they are, right? So just even if there's 20 people lining up and saying, oh, Russell Brand, you know, stroked my hair or whatever he did, I don't believe it by default. I don't believe it by default. And remember the whole Me Too movement was that the quote was, women should always be believed. And that is not true, especially when they're being paid to lie. So as a general principle, I love the idea of believing women, but when the attack is on someone speaking the truth, who's speaking out against the globalist agenda, and this is about something that allegedly took place 15 years ago, and all of a sudden it's this big coordinated attack, raises massive red flags. Do not automatically believe them. Mm-mm. I'm sorry, the rules have changed now, because the viciousness, the lies of the establishment and how they went after Trump with the Russia, the dossier. Remember the Trump dossier? It was all made up. They paid a guy, the FBI paid a guy to write crazy stuff. Like, wasn't there something in there about urinating on the hotel bed or something? They just made it up. They literally made it up the same way they've made up all this garbage against Paxton. And I think that Trump and Paxton and Russell Brand, I think what they all have in common is that the establishment is paying people to lie about them or to make false accusations about them. Because even Alex Jones, he talked about this in a little video he released over the weekend as well. Alex Jones, they paid people to try to smear him. And I know, I can tell you with certainty that there are ex-employees of InfoWars that were absolutely paid to make up lies about Alex and lies about the office. And I actually know the name of one of those ex-employees because I used to talk to him when I was there at the studio, and he took money. I think it was $50,000. He took money from a mainstream newspaper and he made up a bunch of insane lies that I know firsthand not to be true. One of them was an accusation that people walk around the InfoWars office with swastikas on their shoes. I mean, it's like, are you kidding me? Nobody has swastikas on their shoes. Because InfoWars hates Nazis. InfoWars is anti-Nazi. InfoWars hates fascists. Somebody with swastikas on their shoes would be run out of there, by the way. I'm telling you. And there are ex-employees at InfoWars that have absolutely been contacted by the deep state, threatened, and paid to fabricate false claims. I know that firsthand. I've seen it happen. Oh, and by the way, you can bet they're going to use all the same tactics against RFK Jr. All kinds of tactics. They're going to have women come out and claim this and that. Yeah. No question. Because he's a threat. He's probably the biggest threat to the entire establishment at this point. So they're going to go after him. They'll probably find like 80 women to accuse him of something. There's probably 80 women that were chasing him and wanted to sleep with him. And then he said no. And then they got mad. And then they agreed to get paid to make up false claims or something like that. Yeah, that happens. When you're a Kennedy, I'm sure that happens. Now, let's shift gears here for a second. Let's talk about the Department of Defense wanting to wage war on three fronts I mentioned earlier. The U.S. wants to go to war with Russia, China, and Mexico all at the same time. This is insane. The U.S. Army War College has issued a report that's rather important. Let me bring up the title. Here it is. It's called A Call to Action, Lessons from Ukraine for the Future Force. This was issued July 28th, 2023. And if you read this report, it says that quote, the United States sustained about 50,000 casualties in two decades of fighting in Iraq and Afghanistan. Okay, you got that? That's 20 years of fighting. About 50,000 casualties, that's dead and wounded. That's Iraq and Afghanistan. But in large-scale combat operations, they're talking about with Russia or China, the United States could experience that same number of casualties in 2 weeks. 25,000 casualties a week is what the United States should expect. Or roughly, more precisely, this report estimates that there would be 3,600 casualties per day of Americans. So should we go to Russia, you can count on 3,600 Americans being killed or wounded or maimed every single day. And as a result of that, because there are not enough people joining the U.S. military right now to make up for those kinds of losses, by the way, it's going to require conscription. And this is the conclusion of the report from the U.S. Army War College. That's their conclusion. Here's what they say. Quote, the implication is that the 1970s concept of an all-volunteer force has outlived its shelf life and does not align with the current operating environment. The technological revolution described below suggests that this force has reached obsolescence. Large-scale combat operations, troop requirements, may well require a, they call it a reconceptualization of the 1970s and 1980s volunteer force and a move toward partial conscription. So you should understand what this means. If the U.S. goes to war with Russia, it means the draft is on all across America. And they're going to have to find 3,600 men and women every day to throw at Russia to be killed and maimed and injured every day because Biden and the crazy insane regime wants to destroy Russia. This is the cost of allowing rigged elections. So all the Democrats out there that stood back and allowed the election to be rigged or took part in the rigging and just smiled and chortled because they thought, oh, we're beating Trump. Guess what? Your sons and daughters are going to be slaughtered by the Russians or the Chinese or the Mexican drug cartels because you allowed a bunch of criminals and cheaters to steal the power of the United States government and now to wield it as a weapon against other geopolitical enemies at the cost of your blood, your children and grandchildren, depending on your age. They will pay for your arrogance with their lives because you allowed a cheater to take the White House. If we had Trump in the White House right now, we wouldn't be in a war with Russia. It'd be very different. And we wouldn't be about to go into a war with China, by the way. I'm telling you, these rigged elections have consequences. So you should assume there's going to be a draft. And by the way, since it's now, you know, gender equality all across America, that draft, by definition, has to include women. You can't just draft men because according to the establishment, there's no difference between men and women. Men can be women. Women can be men. They can't even define a woman. And you've got these transgenders in the military that are recruiters. So clearly, if you have a draft, you have to start drafting women. Can you imagine that? Can you imagine the United States of America drafting millions of women to be slaughtered on the front lines by Russian artillery and claiming it's all for inclusiveness and tolerance and equality? The trans agenda is finally getting what it wants. The blood and guts and flesh of dead women on the front lines of battle. Yeah, that's what this is coming to. This has a very real cost in human suffering and human lives. This is why this madness has got to stop. We've got to speak out. I mean, contact your representatives in Congress. Call your senators. Tell them no war. No war with Russia. No war with China. No war with Mexico. Stop the insanity and keep our women and men safe at home, for God's sake. We cannot afford a war. It would devastate us. Well, things are bad enough in America right now, and we can't afford to spend billions or print trillions fighting wars with other countries that frankly have a lot more industry than we do. And they have a lot more young men and women who are capable than we do, by the way. I mean, America is crumbling. It's so bad that in Los Angeles, they're now spending, the government is spending $44,000 per tent for a homeless village. Yeah, this is a headline from The Messenger. $44,000 per tent for a temporary tent for this homeless village. From the story, oh, here's from the LA Times, says, quote, all told, it costs about $4 million to put up fencing, bathrooms, and staffing facilities for the village. And then catering services and 24/7 staffing costs another $3 million per year to let people sleep in tents. Okay, so despite the high cost, they write, the site is only temporary. It's located on a parking lot that will eventually be turned into public housing. But because it will take years for construction, the city decided to fill the space with tents. So the San Francisco-based urban or nonprofit called Urban Alchemy runs the encampment. Folks, this is incredible. These are, it looks like these are canvas tents. I'm not sure if they're canvas, but they look canvas to me. They're definitely nicer tents than just a little pop-up camping tent. This tent city contains, quote, higher quality tents than anything someone could buy from a typical camping store. It's got a bed in it, it's got a storage locker, and it's on a wooden platform, a little, like a few inches above the ground on a piece of wood. So, oh yeah, here it is. It is canvas. Sturdy white canvas. So, anyway, yeah, canvas tents are actually the best. I mean, canvas is what you want. If you're going to live in a tent, you want canvas because it breathes. You don't want moisture buildup inside your tent, by the way. So canvas is the way to go. And in LA, maybe the weather there, you know, is very amenable to living in a canvas tent where you don't have to have all kinds of crazy heating and cooling. But this looks like a foreshadow of things to come across the country. I have a feeling we're going to be looking at tent cities all over America's cities, because mass homelessness is going to skyrocket under the policies of Bidenomics and the Biden regime, all the money printing, the food inflation, you name it. We're going to see people lose their homes in droves. People are going to be living in tents. It's the return to the tent cities. And I may have mentioned this before, but my grandparents lived in a tent during the Great Depression. They told me about it. And it was actually a tent that was provided by a corporation that my grandfather worked for. So when you went to work for this company, they gave you a tent and a little plot, you know, like a little bit bigger than the tent, in this giant field, and all your coworkers lived beside you in their tents. And yeah, it was poverty, but you had at least a tent over your head. You know, you had some kind of roof over your head. You weren't just out in the rain all day. But no one wants to live in a tent long term. And yet this is what it's coming to all across America, massive tent cities. Now in Seattle, by the way, law enforcement is telling people to give the criminals whatever they want. Here's a story. This came out in AmericanThinker.com. Sheriff David Robinson recommends that they, quote, give up your car keys and give the criminals, quote, whatever they're looking for. Wow. Really? So this is because crime is so bad in Seattle. Significant police shortages, rising crime rates, large increases in staged carjackings. So just give them your keys. Just do what they say. Because law enforcement can't be there because they've defunded the police. Yeah, well, that's not going to fly in Texas. Carjackers have a very short lifespan, it turns out, in Texas. Very, very short. But in Seattle, maybe they've got quite a career ahead of them. I guess the average citizen who's still living there is like, take it, do whatever you want. I'm not going to resist. I'm a soy boy snowflake. You know, that's because who still lives in Seattle, in the city, anyway? Other than like soy boys and snowflakes. I mean, is anybody listening to this still living in Seattle? What the hell? What are you doing there? How come you haven't escaped yet? Get out while you can. or Portland for that matter, or Chicago, you know? I mean, I'm not talking about the suburbs. I'm saying in the inner city. It's a death trap. Come on. Time to leave. And even if you defend yourself, you know they'll arrest you, right? And the libtard fascist jury will convict you for defending yourself. Yeah, it's not just about being able to defend yourself. You got to do so in a county where the jurors aren't also libtards. Because, you know, the jurors determine your fate. And if you have a trial and you get a jury in Seattle, you're screwed. They'll side with the criminals because that's what libtards do. All right, by the way, here's another story kind of related on Daily Wire. Inside Colony Ridge, the fastest growing development in the U.S. is a magnet for illegal immigrants. This is one of the communities that Michael Yon was talking about, and he got a bunch of flack about it, but he was telling the truth. Here's a story. Plum Grove, Texas, a Texas land developer has established a sprawling settlement north of Houston where thousands of illegal immigrants are believed to have settled, raising concerns among experts and elected officials that the development 400 miles into the interior of the United States could become a strategic asset for cartels. Yeah, this is a community for illegals that is a staging area. This is a beachhead for the criminal cartels to come in and then run operations from that location. All right, so continuing from the story, located in Liberty County, Texas, near the small town of Plum Grove, the Colony Ridge development is a sprawling community, now over 60 square miles and nearly the size of the nation's capital, Washington, D.C. Its population is estimated to be between 50,000 to 75,000 people, and it's growing rapidly thanks to a marketing plan targeted at Texas' Hispanic population. So get this. Colony Ridge, owned and operated by developer William Trey Harris, who Michael Yon explained that this guy's got, he has ties to Governor Abbott, is rapidly expanding, at least in part due to a financial arrangement that makes it possible for illegal aliens to buy land deep in the heart of Texas. Get this. While traditional financing methods require credit ratings and proof of income, a national security fellow at the Center for Immigration Studies named Todd Benzman told the Daily Wire that buyers at Colony Ridge are able to circumvent the usual requirements, even dodging the need to provide a social security number. Buyers at Colony Ridge can pay as little as a few hundred dollars for a down payment. The loan is directly from the developer, bypassing traditional mortgages, and the interest rates can be near 15%. So this is advertised on Instagram. It appears to target people who are not currently living in the United States or who are not citizens of the country. The caption of the post, written in Spanish, translates roughly into "still renting, own land in the United States." So bottom line, folks, what Michael Yon told us was absolutely true. This is a beachhead for illegals coming to the United States, and they have their own city now, which Michael Yon says could eventually have 200,000 people. And they're just going to live right in Texas. And eventually there's going to be enough of them where they just, I mean, you know how this goes. They'll just assert, you know, their occupation of Texas because they're here, and they're here in large numbers. And that's the entire goal, to take over, to occupy the United States and to replace Americans with these illegals by the hundreds of thousands. All right, welcome to today's interview, folks. Here on Brighteon.com, I'm Mike Adams, the founder of Brighteon. And today we have a new guest, someone who I've enjoyed many of his videos on YouTube, and he's on Twitter and some other places. His name is Steve Poplar, and he's with The Poplar Report. He's an accountant, and he's careful to state that at the beginning of every one of his reports. And he compiles a lot of pretty frightening information about what's happening with supply chain shortages, the dollar scarcity, and reports from people all over the country and around the world who are bringing, like, on the street intel. And Steve Poplar compiles that and delivers it every day on his channel on YouTube. So, Steve Poplar, welcome to the show. It's great to have you on today, sir.
Oh, it's great to be here, for sure. I feel free right here on this platform. This is amazing.
You are indeed free. You do not have to censor or hold back in any way. You can say whatever you want. But tell people a little bit about what you do, since this is your first time on my show. I described it, but you can probably describe it better. And also a little bit of your background and how you got into this.
Sure. My background's in disaster relief and then in accounting. We have just this idea that to kind of push back on government is all about us having to build our own systems, like you're building the network here at Brighteon, and just all the news reporting that is out there. We all know how garbage it is. On the mainstream media, it's just absolute garbage. They're just puppets for the CIA, really. They're waging this info war against anyone who disagrees with them. And we don't have freedom of thought in the mainstream media. And that's really what kind of drove me to be a part of this community. First, I was a viewer on a lot of the channels on YouTube that are kind of speaking out and providing alternative narratives to what's going on. And when I got on, I was like, you know, maybe I can do that too. And so that's what I did. I started posting some videos, and a lot of folks really appreciate what I had to say, kind of the analytical, no BS, straight at you perspective, but with principles. And that's kind of where we got started, and how I am here, I guess. We post a lot of videos on what's going on, but then adding context to that. And then also, like you said, we do a lot of videos where we're posting what the viewers are sharing with us.
Yes.
And so
yes.
That's kind of strategic on my part, for sure, is because I want people in the community to feel like they're contributing. I want them to be taking ownership of pushing back and not just watching somebody on the YouTube or the TV screen doing something, but rather they're all participating in this network of information gathering and sharing vital information. And I think that we need these networks more now than ever before.
Yeah, completely agree. And plus, all those people who are reporting to you, you know, they're everywhere. They're all over the country, different cities. And, you know, I've watched some of your reports where you'll say, you know, here in, in Los Angeles, the Costcos have run out of, you know, canned chicken meat or whatever. Like, it's very granular in terms of the reporting of the scarcity that's going on at all the different food retailers across the country right now. And that's a trend that you've really reported on a lot recently, as I understand it.
Yeah. I want to open up the data to people. And I think that's one of the things that really drives me nuts about the media and everything. They claim something, but then they never show us the data. They never give us the data sets. And I think that people are just hungry for being able to look at the numbers, look at the reports themselves, and make a decision for themselves and not have someone tell them what they're supposed to think and then just not give them the data. And I've said it on several occasions, and you know, the quiet part out loud, so to speak, that right now we're reporting on food shortages and empty shelves, but maybe this is a practice run for us gathering information for other things in the future.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, in fact, may I ask you, you said your background was in disaster relief. Can you share any more details about what you did or you currently do?
Sure. I served overseas with a nonprofit in the Afghanistan region for 2 years.
Really?
Almost went back for two more years in the heart of Afghanistan. But while I was still in training, my team actually got taken hostage by the Taliban. So that kind of didn't pan out.
Wait a second. Were you taken hostage also?
No, I was in training in Switzerland when that happened with Christian group called MedAir. And they had the team that I was actually supposed to join was actually taken hostage, and they were rescued. But, you know, that kind of hit pretty close to home. It was in the region that I was working in before for 2 years.
Yeah.
I've done a bunch of disaster relief here in the United States too, particularly with Southern Baptist Disaster Relief.
Okay.
Superstorm Sandy, Cape Coral in Florida, for Irma, Matthew, Hurricane Matthew, North Carolina, Kentucky last year for the flooding, Hurricane Ian last year. So I've traveled pretty extensively around the world, 50 countries now, actually. And
wow.
As I've traveled, one of the big things that was always on my mind and heart was the disasters that happened in those places. So really trying to understand the catastrophes that befell these countries. So I spent a lot of time in Sarajevo, taking the tours there and really asking a lot of questions. Cambodia, the killing fields, the, Phnom Penh. We have spent some time in Vietnam, just in South Africa, wow. too. Just really just asking the question, like, how does the society get to those really, really bad places? Like,
well, I think that's an invaluable experience to see all of that firsthand. I mean, nothing replaces that.
Sure. And so when people start talking about SHTF, I want to keep fighting back that it is stuff hitting the fan. Okay. let's clean that up. Right. But when I'm talking about disasters, when I'm talking about these serious devolutions of society, these are things that I've either seen firsthand or I've talked to people who have been through those processes in years past and in maybe a dozen countries now, I guess. It's just what people don't realize is that we're not talking about some theoretical thing that could happen. We're talking about things that are happening in other countries right now and have happened in hundreds of countries in the last 50 years. I mean, we're not talking about some theoretical thing. We're talking about very practical reality for most of the world. So, it gets me a little fired up for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
When we're talking about these, people are like, well, I don't need to stock up. I don't need to get prepared. I don't need to watch what's going on in the world. I can just assume that everything's going to be fine and good for forever. And that's just not the way it is.
Yeah.
Empires come and fall, and we've had it so good here in America. I know a lot of your viewers are in America, but even in the Western world, Europe, much of Europe has had it very, very good since the end of World War II.
Oh yeah. No kidding. Well, we've been living in an artificial economy of, money printing, artificially low interest rates and global reserve currency status, which we're losing, but maybe we can come back to that. But I want to ask you then, given your rather vast experience in disaster relief, have you noticed the anomalies at Lahaina in Maui? I mean, I don't know if you've even spoken about that, but has anything come to your mind about, whoa, that's out of the ordinary? Like the fact that the authorities still won't release the numbers of children that are missing. Like what? Why not?
Yeah, that's super, super concerning for sure. A lot of the stuff, I know a lot of people always kind of like, well, where's FEMA? Where's FEMA? And being at disaster relief zones in the United States, you realize that FEMA doesn't really do all that much. They're bureaucrats with clipboards that come wandering around and just kind of criticizing everyone's actually doing any work. Now,
yeah, but they just asked for $16 billion in more funding from Biden. I think it was $16 billion. You know, that's a boatload of money. I guess they got to pay for all the luxury hotels.
Their budget is $28 billion for the year, and they're asking for another $16 billion. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, what are they doing with all that? Where's this money going?
Now, we have had a lot of disasters this year. I believe it's like 25 disasters so far this year of over $1 billion. But still, what are they doing? Are they just writing checks for everybody that's getting some damage done to their homes? And you know, all that money is not mostly going to people who are on the ground struggling. Most of that's going to corporations. Most of that's going to, very wealthy people.
Yeah.
And just whenever you see money being dispersed, you just know that a small percentage of it is actually going to those who are really in need. And a lot of it's going to pay off special interests and all sorts of things. I mean, the contractors that are sitting at warehouses and selling things for ridiculous markups to the federal government for these disaster zones, they're the ones who are making all this money.
Clearly.
But Lahaina just... it's hard to dig into these things because it's like, once again, they don't give you the actual data.
They built a wall around. I mean, Well, a blackout fence around the areas that burned. It's kind of like you're not allowed to look in there.
Yeah, I was actually trying to dig into the numbers on sea level rise. Because I was one late night, nerds like me in accounting will do this kind of thing. I was like, I'm going to go dig into those tidal charts for the last 100 years and in all over the world, right? So I was looking at tidal charts for the past 100 years in Venice, and I was finding these. I was finding these data sets. So it's like, warning, do not use this without proper context. Like, that was stamped on the data set. And I was like, what?
Wow.
Like, this is crazy. I was like, I wonder if I can just catch them cherry picking information, but they're taking like whole decades off the chart. And just like, that's super sketchy. Why can't they trust us with the data?
Yeah, right.
But the thing is, they have to withhold the data and just provide us the proper context. And that's what just drives, I think, all of us nuts, is just give me the truth. Like, maybe I won't like the truth, but like, don't lie to me.
Yeah.
Don't lie to me, and don't hide the truth from me, because that's just infuriating. We're all infuriated by that.
And as an accountant, you know, you are a data-driven person. That's your mindset, right? You're kind of like, show me the facts, show me the data, which I think is really critical. And yet, I would say we're living in a time right now where, whether we're talking about COVID or vaccines or inflation, it's all being rigged. It's all fiction. They don't want to show you any real data. And you've even got people like Ocasio-Cortez out there saying that inflation is a right-wing conspiracy theory. Like, pardon my language, but bitch, have you gone to the grocery store recently? I mean, you know, it's very expensive right now. Mm-hmm. You know, how does she think that that's a conspiracy theory?
Well, when she drives her Tesla to the Whole Foods and doesn't park in a parking spot, I think that gives you a little bit of information about where her head is at.
Yep.
And it's just, you know, when she first got elected to Congress, I remember her whining about how she couldn't afford a house in Washington, D.C.
True.
And she, what, congressmen get like $220,000, I think it is. Well, that's the last time before they probably gave themselves a bunch of pay upgrades since then. But I mean, $200,000+ and you want to complain to us about you can't get a house, you can't rent an apartment? Like, yep. Seriously?
Yep. No, exactly. But just shifting gears a little bit, one of the things I like about your report, Steve, is that you don't just focus on problems. I mean, you do point them out, and kind of like a forewarning of what's coming, you know, food scarcity, sure, price inflation, these other things. But what also comes across is that you have a strong philosophy of believing in, you know, local organizing, community strength, and self-reliance. Can you speak about that for a minute?
Sure. I've said before that, you know, when it comes to like the woke mind virus, when it comes to these bad ideas, the only thing that supplants a bad idea is a good idea, a better idea. And I believe that truthfully, the best idea is the gospel of Jesus Christ. And that is the idea that will drive out anything else. But the idea that we also have local non-centralized organizations is so critical. And that is from farmers markets to personal relationships that people have. I think churches are extremely powerful. I think that's why the government keeps waging war on churches as best as it can, is because having these local autonomous bodies of or groups of people that are working together for the good of themselves and for the good of their community, I mean, that just scares the pants off the government, because you're not supposed to be going to a church to get food at their food pantry. You're supposed to be going to the government food pantry and giving away all your information so that they can run the tax numbers on you, they can capture your social security number, so they can the number of hoops you have to jump through nowadays to go to a government food bank is it's growing. And now I'm all about accountability and making sure that the people that are getting support are the people who need it. But you can see that there's nefarious things afoot here.
Yeah.
They are trying to capture people's information, and they're really trying to close down all the loopholes, because what I see coming for sure is that they are going to be coming after, just as they say, you're spending more than your fair share. And then they've started saying that with carbon now too. Like you're using more than your fair share of carbon dioxide, right? You're producing more than your fair share. And pretty soon, and they're already talking about it, is that you're using more than you're buying more than your fair share of food.
And, right.
And they already start talking about that in New York City. It's not crazy. They want to control everything, and we need to be pushing back at every level. Whatever you have to ask yourself the question, you know, what power do they have, or what power are they trying to gather, and how can we kind of push back? How can we take that power back?
Yes.
You see what they're doing in the schools, and we should be asking ourselves the question. My church asks ourselves the question, how can we counteract a lot of the damage that's being done in these public schools to the kids? We have the kids like 1 hour a week, you know, 2 hours a week. And then the schools have them for just the rest.
Yeah.
And how do we...
Well, they need drag queen story time hour time, you know, every day, apparently. No, it's an abomination. It's insane. It's like Sodom and Gomorrah in the schools now.
Mm-hmm. Sure. But yeah, so local networks, I believe that a bunch of these YouTubers are building networks too. And I think that that's important for us. But one of the things I push back a little bit on is when people start getting all like, we need to organize. And I push back on that because I think we should have decentralized organizations.
Right.
You saw this with the Proud Boys, right? I'm amazed what I can say here freely.
yeah, you can say it all. Go for it.
People were leaders that weren't even there. They weren't even there. And yet they're being arrested because they're part of this network, because they're part of this organization.
Yeah.
The government loves when people stand up to them, because then they have the opportunity to slam them down, lock them away for forever, to send the troops out on the streets. They love it when you stand directly up to them. What they hate is you hiding in the shadows and just sniping at them, going, you know, they do something and you run after them and you take them down. The Blade Runners in London are a perfect example. London decided to set up all these cameras to enforce their very low admission zone. If you're not paying the tax, you get hit with a $200 penalty every time one of their cameras takes a picture of you. And so the Blade Runners, so they call themselves, are going out there and they're vandalizing these cameras. They're taking these cameras down. They're taking down hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of these cameras. So oftentimes out in the broad daylight, you see videos of them out there just going up there and just cutting the wires and pulling these things down, or using grinders to cut down the poles. And people are just done with it. And they're finding creative ways to say, you want to automate this? Well, we'll just de-automate it for you.
Wow.
And we have this, a lot of people think of resistance in binary terms. It's like either you're going to go all full revolution or something, which is just pure suicide. And I've seen war. I've seen the results of civil war in countries, and we don't want that.
Right.
I promise you, we do not want that. But we do have power to just hear something like what they're doing in New Mexico. They passed this unconstitutional emergency action. New Mexico.
Yeah.
And they said, you know, you're not allowed to have guns out in the open. You're not allowed to have concealed carry, even though we issued you these permits. We're just going to suspend that. And the people are just like, no.
Yeah, they came out and just rallied openly carrying firearms and telling Governor Grisham to go pound sand.
And the sheriff is like, I'm not going to enforce that. That's crazy. And when people just like, no, we're not going to do that, then all they really have is a piece of paper that's as worthless as their Federal Reserve note, right?
Well, right. But it also goes to show you that the whole idea of applying for permission to carry concealed is a pointless exercise anyway, if government can just revoke that permission. You know, it's a constitutional right to carry. You don't need government permission to exercise your constitutional rights.
Yeah, but the guys with all the sticks and all the guns are telling us what our rights now are, regardless of what the Constitution has ever said. And that's really where we come to the crux of it is they are trying to usurp more and more authority, more and more power in our everyday lives. They're trying to mess with what you're growing in your garden. They're telling you can't have chickens in your backyard. They're telling you all these different things that they're doing. And, you know, we have to push back on these things. We have to go ahead and flaunt them when they overreach. We have to organize with others to do that.
Yeah.
But we have to be creative about it. And that's one of the things that these morons, they're gluing themselves to roads and throwing paint on art pieces and stuff like that. They don't get is that the purpose of protest, the purpose of pushing back is that you're supposed to be trying to win the hearts of the people.
That's right. Not just annoying everybody by blocking traffic.
Yeah, when you block traffic, you just piss people off. Right. I mean, just people get mad at you. And they're not on your side anymore.
Well, because regular people have to get to work, you know, or get something done. They need to use the roads. By the way, sorry to interrupt, Steve, but I wanted to let you know, I mean, I really admire all your work in all around the world in these rescue missions and, you know, aid, humanitarian aid, however you describe it. But I wanted to let you know, we've done a lot of donations in that space, too. And we gave, I don't know how long ago it was, maybe 6 months or something, shipping $140,000 plus worth of actual food on pallets. We donated to Harvest Time Ministries International and then Convoy of Hope. And I'm sure you've heard of these
good
groups.
Good folks. Very good folks.
And we wanted to connect with Christian-oriented groups because they actually get the food to the people instead of writing a check to some group that just ends up pocketing it and paying fat salaries to their corrupt executives, right? We wanted to get food into the hands of people. And we find these Christian groups are by far the best at getting that done. Is that also what you've noticed?
Sure. And I don't want to talk smack about any of the less Christian nonprofits out there. And there's a big one that we won't mention here, but you can read between the lines on that one. And they do great work. They do great work. But the efficiency there is not the greatest. They get lots and lots of money, but they only pass through a small portion of that. Their volunteers are paid and stuff like that. You see that with a lot of these organizations. But the Christian organizations, pretty much all of them, really. I mean, from the, you know, trying to think of all the other ones that I've run into on the ground. Southern Baptists are the biggest. Them and Salvation Army are fantastic. Convoy of Hope is fantastic. Samaritan's Purse. Is Samaritan's Purse active in the U.S. or is that the Convoy of Hope? Anyway.
No, I think they are active, yeah.
I'm just thinking. They go by something else in the States here. These Christian organizations, different denominations, all those ones, they work hard at making sure that the money is donated, goes right to the ground. And so like a lot of these Christian organizations, everyone's volunteering their time. They're paying their own gas to drive down there.
Wow.
And then they're working for free. When you go to these disaster zones, like in Kentucky, Red Cross did not deploy to Eastern Kentucky for political reasons, it appears like. And that's really frustrating.
Yeah.
Because the global warming crowd said the people in Eastern Kentucky deserved it because they were too conservative and they voted the wrong way.
Wow. I mean, that's unbelievable. Yeah, that truly is unbelievable. But, you know, politics shouldn't come into play when we're just trying to save lives, right? Just trying to rescue people from horrible circumstances. I don't care if they're left-wing, right-wing, independent. I don't care about their skin color, even their sexual orientation. If we're here to save people's lives who are innocent victims, then let's get to work and get that done. But you'd be shocked, Steve, or maybe you wouldn't be shocked, but it was very hard for us to find groups that would take actual food, you know, pallets of food that we commercially ship to them. Almost everybody said, we don't want any food. We don't want any supplements, not even vitamin C. All we want is money. Send us money or send us nothing. And that's not what we do, you know, for all the reasons that we've just talked about. But most groups out there do not want actual food. Tells you something.
Well, it does make the I worked on logistics for a number of these deployments, and the logistics is just ridiculous. Yeah. And so you're getting all these trucks in and you're trying to figure out what you have and what's in there and you're trying to make sure that you're doing some quality control. And so that's why a lot of the organizations actually just prefer just to set up direct purchase agreements with the local warehouses and such.
Yeah.
So basically the grocery stores are shut down. So these warehouses have all this food there that's not going to the stores. And so what they do is they start selling it at discount or to the disaster relief organizations there. Then they don't have to worry about hauling it all across the country.
I see.
But yeah, so in a disaster zone, it's kind of, you have to take control of the chaos. But there's definitely organizations out there that do like that. I don't know if you've heard of Grindstone Ministries with Bear Independent. He's a YouTuber there too. They do a bunch of that. But doing what you can, I think, is just really important. Too many people see the news and they just go, "Oh, that's awful." And maybe they pray for them. Maybe. A lot of times they feel bad for them and then change the channel. And I think it's important for us to see what's happening in the news and try to take action, even if it is in a small way. If it's you,
agreed,
just get down on your knees and praying for the people there. Do that. If it's you sending a little check to somewhere, or you being part of a food drive or some kind of gathering of resources for the people in need in that area, please do that. Every little bit helps. And I think more than that, it helps our souls. It helps us as people to not see something, to get into the habit of seeing people in distress and in pain and closing our hearts to them.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we have to remember we're fighting for team humanity here. We're fighting for the survival of the human race. In fact, let me shift gears, but along those same lines, you as an accountant, you understand the long-term implications of money printing and debt and how we have this debt-based global economy. So I want to ask you, Steve, where do you think this is going? We are, what, $32 trillion in debt officially, and I think $190 trillion in unfunded entitlements owed to the American people over time. I mean, we're talking insane numbers that, frankly, almost nobody can even really grasp. What is $200 trillion? What does that even mean? But what's your take on where this is all headed, fiscally or with the currency?
Back when Trump first got elected, I remember saying, it's like, we've gone off the cliff. Now we're just, enjoying the ride before we hit the bottom. And not because of Trump, but because of all the stuff that led up to that. We had such bad money printing up to that point. Now we've just gone to just stupidity, just flat out stupidity. Like, no one can look at these numbers and with any serious sense and say, no one can even justify them. It's funny to listen to the talking heads on some of these market reports and stuff like that, and they're trying to explain away how our federal debt isn't really that bad, and how and everyone looks at the federal debt, but what about the state debt? What about the municipalities' debt? What about the public the debt of corporations? What about all the personal debt? I mean, the federal government's not alone in this. Everyone's borrowing up to their eyeballs. The people are up to their eyeballs in credit card debt and car debt and student loan debt, whether they actually have to ever pay back those student loans. That's a whole nother conversation. but we just have debt out the wazoo. And as I've said, our number one export in the United States is paper bills. We print money and we export them to the world, and that's how we've been funding everything. And more of the world are just like, we don't want your money anymore. Like, we don't want it. We'll take your money, but then we immediately want to transfer it over to something a little more real, like actual goods or gold. And that's what we're seeing a lot of the world taking delivery of gold in their central banks. And people are just done with it. The BRICS countries came together and they're like, we need to stop this. We need to get off of this. We can't have the United States using this dollar bill as a club to beat us over the head with. Every time we do something that they don't like, whoever it is going to get clubbed over the head with sanctions. We're going to get kicked out of SWIFT. And most of the world is just, whether they agree with Iran or whether they agree with Russia or they agree with any of these other countries like Cuba or not, or North Korea, they just realize they could be next. All it is just them making one decision that the president of the United States doesn't like, and boom, they're off SWIFT.
Well, they can't
transfer money around.
But now with the CBDCs being rolled out probably at some point here soon, they can do that on the individual level. So they can sanction you as a person the same way they just sanction Russia. And by the way, there's 600 billion British pounds worth of Russian money that's being held by Western central banks. And Western countries are filing lawsuits to try to just take that money, just loot it. I mean, it's piracy. It's just straight up you know, piracy of the high seas of finance. Just, hey, let's just steal $600 billion worth from Russia.
It gets us into the question of, is it a war crime if you're not technically at war? It's just, I mean, when you start asking those crazy type questions, is it a war crime if we're not at war? Because seizing individuals' private property during wartime without a military necessity is a war crime. And yet we're doing that and we're not even at war with Russia. Like, what sense does that make? And nothing about what we're doing nowadays makes sense other than we're the ones with the biggest stick. And so therefore we're going to do whatever we want to do. And everyone's going to have to either get along with it or they're going to have to shut up. And that's what we see with the world. Most of the world is going along with it, and some of the world is shutting up about it. We're seeing countries that should be in our corner are more and more just kind of sneaking off to the side because they don't agree with what we're doing, and they're afraid that they'll be next.
Well, and clearly the U.S. over the last 25, 30 years has sent that message that if you don't agree with us, we're going to assassinate your leaders, we're going to bomb your country. I mean, look at Libya, look at Iraq, look at Vietnam. I mean, just over and over and over again, it's like you either do what we say and you sell oil in dollars, or we're going to militarily or economically destroy your nation and or cause a color revolution, a civil war, a revolution, you know, a takeover. Look at Ukraine, 2014, right? So this is the message from the U.S. And it seems like the world has really become fed up with it, or at least many countries around the world.
Even worse than that, they've learned from it. And we're seeing Russia doing that right now across Africa. They're doing their own color revolution across Africa. I think it's four countries now. Four countries now that have now collapsed, and they've been overthrown from being Western allied to being pro-Russia. And Russia has been not hiding this. They're going across Africa. They're trying to flip as many countries as possible to being puppet states for them. They've learned right from the CIA. They said, yeah, that's pretty good, you know, bang for your buck. You put in this much money, you can flip a country to being your trade partner, and then you can use them for military and staging your military bases and all this kind of stuff like that. And we're seeing that going down right now in Niger. Yeah. And the last time, wasn't Blinken. It was, I think, like the assistant secretary of state was like in Africa doing their tour. And it was like she was going around like a beggar.
You talking about Nuland?
Nuland. Yeah.
She's a piece of work right there.
She was going around, you know, like Oliver Twist, like, please, sir, may I have some more? And everyone kind of saw the weakness that she was displaying across Africa as Russia's flipping countries and the United States is just like they're whining. And yeah. I'm not saying that we should be playing those games, but here's the fact is that you reap what you sow, right? And we've sown chaos and insurrections and coups all over the world. And now we're starting to see that Russia is starting to learn how to play that game too. And how long before China starts playing that game? Now, and when China and Russia are playing that game, what chance do we have then?
Yeah, good question. But you mentioned you reap what you sow. So let me bring up another topic along those same lines. And recently, New York City Mayor Eric Adams announced that New York City would be destroyed by illegal immigration. And then a few days later, he announced massive budget cuts, across the city, which has obviously a very large budget, a multi-billion dollar budget. But they have to cut the budget because they need more money to pay for the illegals. And then also the mayor of Chicago, Johnson, I think is his name, just announced that the people of Chicago are going to have to, quote, sacrifice more because they have to pay, for the money and the care and the infrastructure for the illegals that are coming to Chicago. But both of these cities are sanctuary cities that said, hey, you can come here. Well, they went there and now it's a catastrophe. So just fiscally speaking, how are these cities going to stay solvent when they can't print money, by the way? I mean, they can issue bonds, yes, but there's a limit to that.
They have been, and they're getting to the point where they're going to start defaulting on those too.
Exactly.
If you want to make a whole bunch of money, just start buying bond swaps on these cities like Chicago and stuff.
Right.
It's insane. sooner or later, it's going to blow up in their face. I mean, they wanted open borders so that they could bring as many Democrats across the southern border as possible. And then they were going to just figure out how to get them votes sooner or later. But really what they're doing is they're bringing them all into all these cities. And they're finding that some of their constituents, the historical preferences of some of these minority groups and such like that, that have been voting consistently Democrat, are starting to ask questions. And they're not liking the answers they're getting from their political leaders. And they're pushing back now. And it's kind of funny that that they were bringing all these people across the border in order to make them Democrats. But it's starting to be that their Democrats that they already have are starting to get really, really upset with them.
Yeah.
About this. And just, well, it's like a comedy sketch. I mean, it's
right.
Like a bumble.
They're begging for this, and now they're getting what they asked for. They're getting what they voted for, and now they're crying as if it's a horrible catastrophe. But you asked for that, you know?
Sure. Sure.
So these cities are many of them are insolvent. I mean, look at Illinois, right? I'm sure you've looked at some of the financial numbers of the state of Illinois. That state's bankrupt.
Yeah, the state keeps bailing out Chicago. So yeah. I mean, it's like. My brother was actually looking at moving out to Illinois. I was like, you don't really want to do that. He's like, oh, we won't be near the city. I was like, yeah, but you'll be still funding Chicago.
That's right.
And, just like, that's just insane. What do they say the problem with communism is, right? That you eventually run out of everyone else's money.
Uh-huh.
Yep. was that Reagan? I believe it was.
Well, and we've also seen states. I think California was talking about this, maybe New York, where they want to financially penalize you if you sell your home and leave the state. And at one point, somebody in California, some bureaucrat, was saying that they want to maintain the power to tax former Californians no matter where they go across America. It's like, you can't escape. They're going to, hunt you down, chase you down in Arizona and say, pay us in California? You know, how's that going to work?
New York is famous for doing that. New York City is famous for going after people after they've left.
Yes.
It's ridiculous. It's whatever it takes to fill up their budgets. And they're not even trying to balance their budgets. They're just trying to get enough revenue that they can claim that they have that revenue so that they can then borrow more money against that revenue.
All right, good point.
They're just like a bank like that. You know, you deposit $100,000 in the bank, and maybe not you or I, but you know, some rich person goes and deposits $100,000 at a bank, and the bank then starts borrowing against that, and they buy 100,000 you put in the bank. They borrow 1.8 million.
Yeah.
from different assets that they're buying up, and then you go to the bank and you're like, I want my $100,000 back. And they're in trouble. In trouble, especially if those investments have gone down, which is where most of the banks are these days, they have I think $3 trillion worth of unrealized losses. They refuse to sell these bonds and stocks so they can keep saying that they're still at the purchase price value.
And the bonds are becoming worthless because of rising interest rates.
Because they've borrowed money against all the value of these stocks and bonds and all the kind of stuff like that. And so that's why we saw Signature Bank go down. We saw Silicon Valley Bank go down the same way. It's like they're so over leveraged. And when their investments came down, they're in the hole. But then they turn around and somebody comes in and says, I want my deposits back. And they're like, we don't have them. And it was like, you know, It's a Wonderful Life, except without the heartwarmingness of it.
Right.
And that's where we are with all these things, is that they cannot give everyone their money back. And yet people are going into the bank and taking their money out by the billions. People don't realize that when they transfer their money from checking account over to money market, it's a different classification inside their banking system. They can borrow 18 to 1 against your deposits in the checking account. They can't borrow 18 to 1 against your money sitting in the money market account. And so that's effectively like you taking that money out of the bank and stuffing it under your mattress from the bank's perspective. And right. That's what's happening, because people are just like, why would I get 0% interest in my checking account when I can get 5% interest in a money market? Like, why wouldn't I do that? And people are moving their billions and tens of billions and hundreds of billions of dollars over into money market accounts, and the banks are toast. I mean, they're in so much trouble. We're just waiting for the next ones to start collapsing.
Well, I'm sure that's going to be happening soon, by the way. But in the few minutes we have left here, Steve, and I want to mention your website again, thepoplarreport.com is where people can follow your work there and also your channels on YouTube and Twitter. But what would you say are the safest asset classes that people might want to look at in order to survive the destruction of capital that is clearly underway right now?
The best asset class is stuff you're going to use anyway. So buying stuff that you would buy next year that you can buy now, like food, food preps, paper towels, all these type of things. I think that's very, very accessible for all of us to do is just to buy more of what you're going to buy anyway. Because those things we've seen, one of the best performing asset classes in the past year, the last 2 years, has been things like toilet paper and canned food and all these type of things like that. So getting prepared like that. And then once you have enough of the stuff that you're going to buy anyway, then you start looking at buying things that are similar to that, like silver, gold, platinum, palladium, buying metals that are going to go up in value, that are not going to be subject to inflation is really the best way of doing that. If you want to play games and you want to get into the market and you want to get into like streaming companies, like mining streaming companies, that's an interesting play. Just don't put any money into a brokerage account or into the stock market that you are not prepared to lose, because if you can't hold it in your hand, it's not really yours.
Yeah.
You're just holding a promise of it. You're holding
right.
a promise.
It's just IOUs.
Sure.
Yeah, that's what I tell people who, you know, they go into someplace like Fidelity and they buy something there. They might buy stocks. They can buy Bitcoin. They can buy, you know, gold shares. But it's just IOUs. You don't have it. You don't have the stock certificates.
You ask these people, do you trust bankers? And they'll say, no. You say, well, then where's all your money?
Yeah, exactly. They don't have self-custody.
What do you mean you don't trust bankers? You clearly do trust bankers because you're giving them all your money.
I was watching The Big Short last night. It's one of my favorite movies of all time, right? And
I just wish they could bleep out more of those words. But yeah, other than that.
that is filled with it's profanity. Bracing. That is true. No question about it. But that's a Wall Street culture, is just profanity everywhere all day long in Wall Street. But they were talking about how this cover up was so extensive that even the ratings agencies lied and committed fraud to try to claim that the crisis wasn't happening so that they themselves could get out from underneath it and sell the bad debt to other banks. So even the people who run the system were committing massive fraud, which tells you that if you trust the banks, you know, you're a fool, right? The system is fraudulent and they will commit fraud in order to steal your money even while the whole thing is collapsing. They will do that.
And they're doing it right now. I mean, you look at the credit rating agency's ratings on U.S. government debt. It's absurd. Like the backflips that they're doing to try to say that the U.S. federal government debt is investment grade is just stupid. Like the U.S. government is not going to pay back this debt. The U.S. government doesn't even have a plan to pay back the debt.
That's right.
It doesn't. I mean, like there isn't a conceivable way. Like no one can actually get out a piece of paper and show me how the U.S. government's going to pay off its debt.
No, like it's not going to happen.
The only way they can do that is by printing vast amounts of money and paying it off through inflation. And that's exactly what they're going to do. So,
yep.
I mean, and that means that basically the people who have loaned money at the current rate to the U.S. federal government, and then they're going to get paid back 20 years later in paper that's worthless, is basically just losing all of their money. I mean, it's basically just a long-term default.
Yeah.
And that's anyone
right.
who loans money to the federal government right now over a long haul, I mean, you're dumber than a rock. I mean,
but
you're just
giving
money.
This is the history of currency collapse, and it's just repeating again. Yeah, and you're right. You'd have to be dumber than a rock to put your money in dollars in a bank right now.
And what do the balance sheets of these banks look like?
Yeah, exactly.
A sizable percentage of their investments are U.S. Treasury bills. And it's just ridiculous. Long-term U.S. Treasury bills. It's all one giant Ponzi scheme. And they're just hoping that the federal government and the Federal Reserve will bail them out yet again, as long as they're in the right camp.
Yeah. Well, you know where that ends. At some point, it's too big to bail. Not just too big to fail. But Steve Poplar, we really appreciate you, Steve, for joining us today. Thank you so much. And I want to encourage people to check out your website and also your channel on YouTube, where you give these multiple reports each day. I'm pretty sure. I don't know. How many videos do you actually put out a week?
Two a day.
Two a day.
On this channel. And then a lot of times I do one Bible study a day on my other channel, Bible study channel. Yep.
All right. Well, Steve, we appreciate you and keep up the great work and all the intel that you're bringing people. And I'd love to check out your videos from time to time as well. I would also invite you, of course, you're always welcome at brighttown.com if you want to expand your channels. People would love to see you there. And just keep doing what you're doing. Thank you so much for your service to America.
Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you, Steve. All right, folks, that was Steve Poplar again from thepoplarreport.com. Definitely worth tuning into, and I really enjoyed being able to meet him here for the first time and have a conversation. And, you know, look, there are a lot of good people out there who have good information that can help empower you and help you survive and navigate what's coming. And Steve is one of them. So be sure to share this video. You're welcome to repost this video on other channels and other platforms as well. Of course, I'm Mike Adams here, the founder of Brighteon.com. Thank you for watching today. God bless you all. And I think Steve will agree with me. God bless America. Let's see if we can actually keep this country intact as the others try to tear it down. Thank you for watching today. Take care. Today's interview is brought to you by HealthRangerStore.com and our wide variety of storable food and really high nutrition products. I've got some on my desk, some of my favorites. The one in the center there is coconut milk powder, which is really super delicious. It's mineral rich. And it adds a fatty, creamy, luscious, delicious taste to lots of recipes, including smoothies. We've got quinoa there on the right, which, of course, is a gluten-free. It's kind of a grain. It's not technically a grain, but people use it like a grain. It's really delicious in a lot of recipes. Very high in protein. And I remember eating this when I was hiking in the Andes Mountains. And the local people who helped us, they would bring quinoa and eggs, and they would just get water from the mountain streams, and they would boil the quinoa and eggs, and we would have quinoa egg soup right there on the trail outside of our camping tents. That's on the way. I was hiking to Machu Picchu at that time, and we did the long hike, not the bus ride. It was hiking over the Andes Mountains up to 14,000 feet and back down, and we were powered by quinoa. Okay, then we've also got goji berries on the left there, which are, of course, from the Tibetan regions of modern-day China. But we do all the testing for heavy metals and glyphosate, as well as them being certified organic. So ultra-clean goji berries, world-class quality, available now at healthrangerstore.com, along with many other products such as nascent iodine and also Iosat potassium iodide tablets. You know, good to get that as an emergency measure. We've got pea protein. We've got organic superfruit sea powder, which is really delicious. I use this with blended frozen bananas and frozen blueberries. You can also use freeze-dried blueberries with this, and it makes a super delicious fruit smoothie. Throw in a couple of goji berries in there, or like a small handful, and you've really boosted the nutrition. Organic cacao nibs, and so much more. Check it all out at healthrangerstore.com, and we appreciate your support. Thanks for watching.